You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
And good afternoon to you two as well. It's 1:08 on Tuesday, July 29th, in the year of our Lord 2025. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. He'll be back on Friday, but until then, I'm not locked in here. Locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me. Got a great show coming up today in the 3 o'clock hour. We're going to talk to Austin Wilty. If you have outstanding parking tickets, traffic camera tickets, or late sewage and water board payments, the city is trying to help you out. They got a ticket amnesty program that ends on August 31st. We'll get you the details and tell you how you can benefit in a conversation with Austin Wilty. He's a deputy chief administrative officer at New Orleans City Hall. In this first hour, I have a guest in studio I'm very excited to bring to you. I think this is going to be a great conversation. I want everybody to circle up. For decades, political journalism in America was largely a dry, obscure arena that was mostly paid close attention to by only those whose career depended on it. It wasn't unimportant, but it wasn't something that most Americans really engaged with on an emotional level. You've heard me say it before. My theory holds that beginning with the end of the Cold War, the rise of Fox News and Rush Limbaugh, and the ascendancy of firebrand operatives like Newt Gingrich and Pat Buchanan, activating our political natures by stoking us with fear, anger, and resentment at our fellow Americans, politics and political journalism became something different, something a little more pernicious. And in the 40 years since, an entire right-wing media machine has been built to keep millions of Americans in a state of perpetual terror. You've probably heard me refer to this as the virtual reality helmet with no off switch. There's no hiding the truth anymore. Our politics is no longer dry and obscure. It's all around us, 24/7, and it is bleeding and it is broken. You don't need me to tell you this, but the story that the legacy media routinely fails to tell you is that, yes, our politics is broken. And a very select group of people broke it on purpose. The polarization and discord and anger that we see in response to every shift in the political debate, every mass shooting, every natural disaster, even every new Disney or superhero movie, is the result of a decades-long deliberate project to build a machine that would distort our democracy and break the truth. My guest today used to work inside that machine. Tim Miller spent years as a Republican strategist working in presidential campaigns and GOP communications before walking away to expose what he calls, quote, the corruption, cowardice, and complicity inside the party. Now, as a writer and podcaster for The Bulwark and an author of the best-selling book, Why We Did It, he's calling out his former colleagues and the authoritarianism that they seem hell-bent on bringing to the United States. Tim, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, man. Though I'm kind of interested in the amnesty for the parking tickets.
Yeah.
So I might have to stick around for an hour or two.
I would love it if you stuck around, because we'll have plenty to talk to you about before that. Before we jump in, is there anything in that intro that you take umbrage with or would disagree with?
No, I think that obviously this supercharged with Rush Limbaugh and with talk radio, mm-hmm. I think even before Fox in the 90s, I saw this on the ground working in Republican campaigns, you know, kind of the difference between just how agitated and riled up. The types of folks that came to events were, you know, as the media environment, you know, expanded and as a lot of folks got really in a cocoon, you call the virtual reality headset, but they're in this cocoon, like, where it's like when Rush first started, a lot of people are listening to Rush and maybe getting angry, but then at night they're watching Tom Brokaw or Dan Rather or something, right? Yeah. And so there's like a little bit of a balance into the diet. Mm-hmm. And now the media ecosystems are all encompassing, and there are a lot of people that are just getting rage bait all day. So I think that's pretty fair. I think that they're, to be completely fair, there are elements of this I see in left-wing media that I worry about a little bit. And obviously, they're way behind the right, but yeah. There's certainly some copycats that are doing rage bait stuff on the left. But besides that, hard to argue with your thesis.
I really want to talk to you about the left-wing rage bait, yeah. Because there's you know, people in liberal circles who say, well, if we had our own Fox News.
Yeah.
Then we could, you know, that would be the solution. And I don't know that it really is. And I think most people that aren't Democratic insiders would look at that and say, yes, that's obviously what we need. So we'll discuss that a bit later. But first, if you would, just tell us a bit more about your background and how you got started in politics.
Sure. And I was into politics from the time of being a kid. I don't know. I loved it. I was a political dork. I made a bet with my grandma on the presidential race in 1992 when I was like 9 or something. And I was on the Clinton side of that when she was on the H.W. Bush. So that was I got my $1 in the mail from my grandma. I remember being happy about that.
Nice.
And then, you know, I wanted to get into politics in high school, and I had just kind of a lucky break of our neighbor. I was growing up in Denver, Colorado at the time. Our neighbor was friends with a guy that was running for governor. And so I signed up to intern in the summers. He ends up becoming governor. I end up reading his mail in the Capitol. I was kind of hooked from the start. So I got sucked into campaign politics very early on the Republican side. And there were some elements of that was ideological. And then there were other elements, which was I kind of just really liked politics,
yeah.
You know, and was sort of going up the ladder, if you will.
Yeah, I've never, I have worked. I was about to say I have never worked on a campaign. I have worked on a campaign, but a very tiny one for a, you know, district level executive committee. It was a couple of years ago. They didn't win. And then yeah. I was like, I guess I'm more of a media guy. But like you, I was interested from a young age. Yeah. And here I've ended up at WWL Radio, where I get to talk about it all day with interesting people. So I'm pleased with that. You live here.
Yeah.
I'm curious, what called you to New Orleans? You could have had your pick of anywhere you
wanted
to live.
Yeah, that's true. I love New Orleans. My husband and I, we moved here with our daughter. We love New Orleans. We got married here. My best friend from college, he's from Baton Rouge. His wife's from New Orleans, and I was kind of their third wheel throughout mm-hmm. college. And so I ended up coming here a lot and kind of gathering a lot of friends, mutual friends during that time of, you know, folks they had gone to high school with, or that, you know, other people that we met going to concerts and stuff down here, coming down from Mardi Gras. And I just fell in love with the city. And then, and after Trump won, we moved out of D.C. It was too suffocating. Did not want to live there. Moved to the Bay Area for my husband's job. And then after COVID, I was getting back into politics, getting back into media, you know, doing the Bulwark. And I had to be in D.C. a lot. And yeah. It was just too far to be in the Bay.
Sure.
And so we're like, we love New Orleans. Let's give it a shot. If it doesn't take, we'll get the heck out of there. DC's not going anywhere. We could always move there. It's been the best decision we've made. We've been here like almost 3 years now.
Great.
Put our daughter in kindergarten here. Now she's coming into second grade in a couple of weeks. And everybody loves it. Everybody's been so welcoming. And there's always stuff to do. It's a nice little break. And folks will talk to me about politics, but it's also a nice little break. People have other interests here. You know,
yes,
it's not as suffocating
do.
As being mm-hmm. in DC, which is nice. I can get to talk about LSU or Gumbo or whatever, what shows at Tips or that kind of thing with people, and that's nice.
Good. Well, we'll see if we have some time later today to, you know, kind of go over what bar do you like to go to?
Sure.
You know, what restaurant have you eaten at? It's kind of hard to deny that right now the Republican Party is on somewhat of a winning streak. I would say they're consolidating power in D.C. and state houses from coast to coast. And polling continuously shows that the Republican Party, the Republican brand, is more popular, and not insignificantly so, than the Democratic Party. And yet you have made a career out of distancing yourself from that party, calling it, you know, at times pathetic, comically unfit, made for TV blood sport. A lot of our listeners today don't see it that way.
Sure.
And what do you think is the disconnect?
You know, I think that there are a lot of elements to that. We could probably do 3 hours on that question alone. We've seen, while it's true that the Republican brand is growing, there's been a particular type of Republican that has left the party over that period. And then there's been kind of another category of people that have come into the party. Stereotypically, it's mostly kind of, you know, suburban, middle class, upper middle class, college educated voters who have kind of liberal social views have moved away from the party as the party has gotten more populist, more nativist, right? And I think that the party's drawn in as part of that a lot, you know, a new working class audience, a little more of a diverse audience, working class black and brown people are voting Republican more than ever right now. So there's been a little bit of a trade in the types of voters that are attracted to the party. And, you know, for me, I understand what draws people to Trump, and it's not for me. Even when I was a Republican, I was always kind of a moderate Republican who liked more somebody in the John McCain mold. But I recognize that people are unhappy with the way that the kind of uniparty feel that the bipartisan leadership in this country has governed things from the Iraq War to the housing crisis. Like, we could go down the line. People wanted something different. People wanted somebody who felt like they were fighting this establishment on behalf of regular people. And I think Donald Trump has been very deft at offering an image that he's the person that's going to do that for folks, that he's going to fight for people and actually, you know, try to take on the status quo. The problem is it's mostly BS. You know, it's mostly BS. And like, he's done it in a few areas for sure. It's not like he hasn't accomplished anything. But there are a lot of ways in which he is a very effective and successful con man. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of folks have gotten wrapped up in it. And it's hard to come to terms with that. It's hard to admit it, right? And it's easier to look at the failings on the other side and focus on that and say, well, Trump isn't perfect, this or that. But like, look at the far left, right? Look at what's happening in San Francisco. Look at the trans swimmer, you know? And so I think that, you know, kind of dynamic is what explains it. And I think it's just important to say when assessing all this, this is happening throughout the world. It's this sort of culture battle, this fight between kind of urban, global elites, if you will, in these countries, and, you know, more working class people that live in rural and exurban areas. It's true in Hungary. It's true in Brazil. It's true in India. It's true. Like, they have a Trump in all these places, right? And so it's a phenomenon, I think, that is in large part also kind of driven by, you know, our globalized economy and a bunch of other forces.
Excellent. I think so, you know, as I told you when we were setting this interview up, we have a quite diverse audience, really. Sure. There's a lot of pretty hardcore Trump people listening. There's a lot of never Trump people. There's a lot of politically homeless people. There's a lot of liberals, demographically, racially. We've got what's a pretty big tent on this
program. It's pretty rare these days, so that's good.
It's part of what makes WWL a special station. I know you don't do a lot of terrestrial radio hits, but I thought if there's going to be one, it should be this one. So to the other kind of half of the crowd here that hope for a post-Trump Republican Party that moves away from all that, the sort of spiteful, you know, nationalism and returns to a more classically conservative party. I believe even if Trump disappeared tomorrow, the cake is kind of baked.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's any way that even if he goes away tomorrow, it's inevitable that another version of him will arise. Is that realistic in your view?
Yeah. I mean, look, who knows what the future holds? Yeah. Anybody that sat in one of these chairs in 2004 and said Barack Hussein Obama will be the next president in 2008 would have been told they're crazy. In 2012, you said Donald Trump is going to be the next president. People would have told you you're crazy. So, you know, unexpected things happen. But to me, Donald Trump was in some ways a creation of his own PR skill and his own ability to kind of dominate the news media. But he also was a bottom-up creation of what Republican voters wanted. Like, Republican voters didn't like the candidates I liked. They didn't want McCain and Romney. The National Party force-fed that on them. Not every Republican voter, right? There was a minority of the party that liked that brand of Republican. But the majority of Republicans wanted something more populist, more pugnacious, and different. And I think that they're going to continue to want that. And their appetite for it is not going to be satiated just because Donald Trump won. And again, if you look at things globally, the Republican Party in America is kind of an outlier. Like, in most countries, the right-wing party is a nationalist, anti-immigrant, blood and soil type of party. Like, that's the type of party. Like, that's the right-wing party in basically every country in the world except for us, Britain, Canada, right? Like, a couple of the Anglo countries. And I just think that we're in a lot of ways, they end up mimicking us. But I think that our politics is starting to look more like theirs. And I just think that that's what voters here want. And that's the trajectory things are on. Maybe in 20 years, will that change? And, you know, could things happen that reorient our politics for sure? But I think that's the trajectory that we're on.
In the next several cycles, it seems impossible that the average Republican voter is going to go pull the lever for John McCain, Bush, Mitt Romney.
Well, just look at Nikki Haley. So I left the Republican Party in 2020. I re-registered here in Louisiana to vote for Nikki in the Republican primary. Sure. And, you know, she ended up getting 17-18% of the vote. But a lot of those voters were people like me, mm-hmm. who, like, aren't really even Republican meaningfully anymore, but, like, wanted to try to cast a fight. So if you really look at, like, hardcore Republicans voted for Haley in the primary against Trump, you're really talking about, like, 9-10% of the party, which isn't nothing, you know?
Yeah.
70 million people voted for Trump. Probably 7 million people that like that type of politics, but it's just not a... It's just not a majority in the party anymore, anything really even close to it.
Great. We'll take a break here, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the Democrats and what's going on over there. My guest is Tim Miller. Tim Miller is the host of the Bulwark podcast and the author of the book. What is it? Where'd my sheet go? Why We Did It. Thank you.
A New Orleans resident.
And a resident of New Orleans. He's a New Orleans boy. If you want to get in on this action, shoot me a text, 504-260-1870. That's the Oakenheart Jewelers Talking text line. I'm Ian Hoke. Be right back after this. Stick around.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
You already know our guest this hour is Tim Miller. He's the host of the Bulwark podcast, a writer at large at the Bulwark. We're all very excited to have him here. In studio, he's a New Orleans guy now, our neighbor and yours. Tim, we spoke in the last segment about, you know, how the Republican Party has evolved over our lifetimes. We're just about the same age. What do you view as the key weaknesses of the Democratic Party as it exists today? And how do you tie that to any of the trends that may have began decades ago as we can do with the Republican Party?
Yeah. Well, on the surface level, I think a lot of the key weakness for the Democrats right now is that they... Regardless of what the truth is, we'll get into policies. They do not do a good job of projecting that they are fighting for working people anymore. They just don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, Bernie's pretty good at this. Not exactly my cup of tea politically, but you have to give him credit for that. But, like, their presentation is very, you know, I was the top of my class. I went to an Ivy League. I worked at McKinsey. Yeah. And, that's just kind of the generic Democratic brand right now. And that is not going to have mass appeal. So I think they do better to recruit people who come from different kind of backgrounds, more mm-hmm. types of outsiders. I'm trying to get this guy Dan Osborne on the podcast coming up soon, who's running in Nebraska. He's like totally different working class type of guy, very different views. I think the Democrats could do better to do that. Policy-wise, I think the Democrats' like agenda outside of the issues of the border and inflation was like demonstrates to be pretty fine to appeal in swing states and in blue states. The problem is that the party no longer really is even alive in red states like Louisiana, and they're not trying to figure out what is a policy platform that might resonate with people in a state like Louisiana or Mississippi or Kansas. Like, it's not that long. I mean, Louisiana had a Democratic governor not that long ago. West Virginia had a Democratic senator not that long ago. All these folks are extinct. And a lot of it is that the Democratic Party now is very rigid in their views on a wide range of social issues that's on the left side of the spectrum. And it doesn't feel like there's room for people that have more heterodox views on some of that stuff, more conservative views, more conservative cultural views. And like, that is just bad for the party. I don't exactly know what it would take for a Democrat to win in Louisiana, but certainly it isn't to run as a generic Democrat that agrees down the line on the issues, has the same policy platform as Hakeem Jeffries and Kamala Harris and Chuck Schumer. Like, that doesn't make any sense in Louisiana. And so they need to come up with different models, try out different things. And there just hasn't been an interest in doing that. And I'm hoping that changes. Something I talk about a lot.
Well, yeah, I think you're precisely right. I mean, we had John Bel Edwards, who was a two-term Democrat, really quite popular, reelected without too much difficulty. And he somehow managed to kind of effortlessly do that without even broadcasting to, you know, liberals and progressives. He's like, hey, I'm separating myself from you guys on guns and on abortion. He somehow managed to message that to Republican and independent voters, but not to base Democrats in a way that turned them off.
Was authentic. He wasn't faking it. He was just being him.
Yeah.
This is what I talk about recruiting these types of candidates. You know, and I a lot of times get people who will call me and say, "Hey, Tim, I'm thinking about running. You know, in a place like Louisiana or in a red state or as a third party. Like, what do you think? Like, what do you think?" And I'm like, "Well, what are some cultural issues where you agree with Trump voters?" And a lot of people are like, "Well, not any. I'm repulsed by them." And by the way, I'm repulsed by a lot of the Trump policies, the policies that appeal to Trump voters when it comes to immigration and LGBT and a bunch of other issues. I'm not running for Senate in Louisiana, So you got to figure out like where are areas of common ground and alignment. Or you're not going to win in a state that Trump won by 10, 15, 20 points. And, you know, it's not enough to say, well, you know, I'm more conservative on economic issues, right? That's not the driving force in our politics right now.
I think I heard one of your colleagues at Pod Save America once say that Trump can say something one time and the media will repeat it 1,000 times. Democrats can say something 1,000 times and the media will report it once. And a shorter way to say that is, as far as Democrats pitching their message to the American people, it's not the message, it's the messenger. And I'm curious to see, just to check in with you.
I agree with that. Look, I'm not really big on media criticism. I don't love a lot of the ways that the mainstream media has treated Trump, but there's certainly plenty of criticism of Trump out there in the world. I don't think that that's the issue. That Democrats need to live in the world as it is, not as one that we wish it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, putting out white papers is not drawing a lot of attention these days, right? Giving generic scripted talking points is not a way to get attention right now. Say what you want about Donald Trump, he knows how to get attention. And so I don't think it's like the media's fault that Donald Trump goes out and says outrageous things and then they report on it. They should report on it. We should report on it because oftentimes he does outrageous things too, and so it doesn't make any sense to pretend like it doesn't exist. So Democrats need to figure out how can they engage on these issues, you know, in a way that is compelling, that gets attention in our social media age. I wish this weren't so. I wish everybody was, you know, reading the newspaper like it was 1985, but like they're not. And it's Democratic's job. Yeah. It's Democrats' jobs to get elected and to reach these people with compelling messaging. And the thing I get most annoyed is you hear people be like, the Democrats should just focus on kitchen table issues and not get distracted by all this Trump stuff. And it's like, Trump is a kitchen table issue.
Absolutely.
Transports is a kitchen table. Like, what do you think people are talking about at the kitchen table, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, sure. You should also talk about economic issues and how to help working people. Absolutely. But you've got to engage on the stuff that people are talking about, you know, and I think that the Democrats have had the circles run around them in this area from a communication standpoint.
I absolutely agree. I think there's those sort of culture war issues that they think, well, that's not what this is about. That's not what Americans care about. That's not how we're going to win. And I think, no, you've got to go have that discussion, not an argument, not a fight. Not I'm right and you're wrong, but at least meet them where they're at and hear them out.
It's like, what are you talking about? And if you did a segment here, you know, one 10 minutes and you talked about issues related to trans rights or Epstein or immigration. And then you did the next segment and you wanted to talk about Medicaid. Like, what do you think you're going to get more texts about?
Yeah.
It just is what it is. Like, it doesn't mean we shouldn't cover Medicaid and shouldn't cover all that stuff. You should. But voters are animated by tabloid stuff. And Trump's a tabloid guy. And he's played into it really masterfully. And the Democrats should try to counter it in his domain rather than, you know, letting him run roughshod over the mm-hmm. and have total control over the narrative.
Yeah. So you said you're not big on media criticism. I really am.
Okay, that's
so,
cool.
But we won't linger on that. But I did really want to ask you why you think the liberal version of Fox News is not the answer. And to be clear, MSNBC ain't it. I've said on this program a million times, CNN and MSNBC are often viewed as sort of the left-leaning cable outlets as the equivalent to Fox News. I don't believe that's the case. That's why you don't see Rachel Maddow on stage campaigning for Kamala Harris, things like that. You don't see Joe Biden calling Chris Hayes during a crisis to ask him what he thinks he should do. You know, they're not the same thing. But progressives are starting to clamor and say, where is the donor class that can finance a cable news network and an ecosystem of radio programs and podcasts that can be actually the equivalent to Democrats, what Fox News is to Republicans? You don't think that's the answer?
Well, for starters, Democrats shouldn't try to get a Fox News because Fox News is extremely pernicious and is not adding a lot of value to our society. So just from putting aside the strategy, from a moral standpoint, like Fox News is not the answer. Here's the problem, though. Democrats' issues is not with reaching people who pay attention to political news. And so Democrats are like, we want a Fox News of our own so that I can just wallow in rage and grievance, just like my Republican friend down the block who watches Fox all day does. And it's like, that isn't nutritious. That's not serving anybody. It's not serving the viewer who's watching 10 hours straight of propaganda. And it's also not helping Democrats win because the people that are watching that are already voting for Democrats. Democrats' issue is reaching people who are not as engaged in politics. This is a total switch since 2008.
Yes.
Barack Obama crushed with people who didn't pay that close attention to the news. He was a cultural phenomenon. People were excited about him. The Democrats haven't nominated anybody like that since. And the Democrats do very well with people who read the New York Times, do horribly with people that get their news from TikTok. And so there is things that they should do in the media, which is try to engage with health influencers and comedians and get into that world, right? Like those are the type, like MMA, like the MMA was just here last week. That's crazy. They packed the Smoothie King. People are in the French Quarters all the time, all around, record-breaking attendance. A lot of those folks are Trump voters, but a lot of them aren't like evangelical Christians or whatever. A lot of them might probably voted for Obama. How are the Democrats talking to those folks? Mm-hmm. Is there a Democrat that could comfortably go to the MMA thing and hang out and vibe out and go on an MMA podcast, vibe out? I don't think so. Like that is the big challenge. Like finding people who can get out of the bubble and communicate to, you know, a broader segment of America, and like that is their challenge, not like doing more propaganda for people who are high info news consumers.
Sure.
But we appreciate the high info news consumers who come to the Bulwark and WWL. We love you and appreciate you.
Yes.
But you're already voting.
They make
if you're listening to the Bulwark podcast, you're already voting, right?
Yeah, so absolutely.
To reach new people, you got to do other stuff.
I'm trying to get a fast answer to one question as it will segue into another. Do you think the Republican Party is unsalvageable at this time?
Unsalvageable for me as a classical liberal who has on social issues.
Yeah.
I think it's possible it turns out looking more like a Tory party in the UK that's not it's not for me, but it's not horrible, like a protectionist, nativist party. I think that's possible, but I think that not with Trump in charge.
Sure. Does that mean that responsible conservatives should be working with Democrats and independents to defeat the party completely and start over as opposed to trying to save it from the inside?
I think now, maybe my answer to this would have been different had Trump lost. But now that Trump's been president twice, it's Donald Trump's party, and trying to remake it from the inside is not going to work. And when you say conservatives, also depends, like a lot of conservatives has kind of been redefined now. Like colloquially, regular people who are listening to this, they say conservative, what they mean is they're aligned with Donald Trump and his policies.
Yeah.
Like what you're talking about really is classically liberal
small
type.
Government,
so yeah, small government, you know, free markets
freedom,
and free people.
Liberties, yes,
yeah, libertarians. Exactly. Like that crowd, this is they're going to be at times more aligned with the Democrats, at times, you know, maybe independent and swing voters, but they don't have a home anymore. We don't have a home anymore in the Republican Party and aren't going to anytime soon.
I do want to speak a little bit more about how right-wing media shapes people's beliefs and their loyalties. You have compared working in Republican politics to handing out key bumps of cocaine, handing out little bumps of cocaine to voters. Tell us, what do you mean by that?
I think I was actually reflecting even back in my own time. This relates to this media question, right? I think that once we moved from a place where political media was just the facts, ma'am, you know, straight down the middle, to more of this political infotainment, what people found was if we do a boring segment where we talk about what's in the One Big Beautiful Bill, our numbers are going to go down.
Yeah.
If we do a segment about why you should be pissed that the new Little Mermaid is black, the numbers are going to go up.
Yeah.
Okay. And that is like a little bump. It's like a little drug, right? That your endorphins get up. People get very excited. Like if you're listening, whichever side you are on the little black Little Mermaid story, you're starting to get mad. Like I'm starting to get mad even talking about it. Like why are people pissed about the black Little Mermaid? Like I'm just like right now I can feel my blood pressure rising, right? So if you do that, then you need to keep, you know, to beat this metaphor to death, like you need to keep upping the dose, right? You need more and more, you know, more potent drugs, more potent material to get people's blood pumping. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that now over like a long arc of 25 years, where if you go back and rewatch a Fox segment from 2004, like it is Fox is very different. Like Fox has radicalized itself.
Absolutely. I think after Roger Ailes died, then it was like, okay, well now suddenly the crew is running the ship.
Yeah.
Kind of without any direction from any one person particular who's there to kind of temper it and say, hey, this is still a brand that we have to protect for reasons X, Y, and Z. I don't think there's anybody like that over there anymore. And it's kind of become, you know, Frankenstein's monster that escaped the lab and nobody can control it.
There was maybe a moment right after January 6th where there was a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Look, the Newsmax's ratings started going up. Fox's ratings started going down and they reverted course and got right back in, you know, with Trump.
How would you describe this mechanism by which right-wing media, to wit Fox News, will take something that's maybe a little bit ambiguous or is an outright lie? And that could be anything from Trump won in 2020 to something more like, we spent $50 million on condoms for Gaza.
Yeah.
How do you take nuggets like that and turn them into unassailable truths that people will suffocate themselves arguing with you about, even in the spite of all evidence to the contrary?
Yeah. I don't know that my answer to this is going to be that satisfying. I think it goes back to the fact that people are in an information bubble, mm-hmm. right? And so, again, if you go back to 1996, you listen to Rush for 3 hours a day. He made some good points. He made some bad points. He said something that was untrue. Then at night, what are you doing? You're watching your local news anchor.
Right.
Then you're maybe watching the nightly news. And then that's it. There's no primetime Fox. You can't then turn on Sean Hannity and Jesse Waters, right? And so you got nutritious information mixed in with the rage bait. And like that's not happening anymore. And so, you know, it's like a loop, you know, where this an information gets out there, people at whatever, right? Whatever conservative media outlet they listen to, whether it's Fox or one of these online outlets, people see that it's landing, others copy it, and, you know, it becomes unrefutable inside that bubble.
If Fox News invited you to run 1 hour of primetime and you had total control over your program, what's the opening segment? What's the headline? What do you want those viewers to hear from you in that moment?
That's a good question. I think my answer to this is probably different if I'm talking about, can you use this hour to help the Democratic Party, which I don't, you probably can't, and that's not my job. So I'm really passionate about the immigration issue. And I think that there are a lot of Fox viewers that still have somewhere in there, like a libertarian ethos, a Ronald Reagan shining city on a hill ethos. A lot of these folks came up with that. They came up with Bush and compassionate conservatism. And I like to try to find that inside some of those folks and talk about some of these horror stories. Because I think that while people do want a secure border, they do not want masked men taking people off the streets who did not come here illegally and sending them to a foreign concentration camp like we did with those Venezuelans that we sent to El Salvador, which is horrific. They don't want to grab the 80-year-old Iranian woman who's here in New Orleans gardening, who's been here for 50 years and then gets shackled and put into a prison for a week. Even Republicans don't want that. So I don't think those stories are being covered on Fox. So I'd probably spend the hour talking about the most outrageous abuses that we've seen from ICE in the hopes that it could cause some backlash. Because at the politician level, you've seen that Steve Scalise spoke out against some of these.
Yeah.
So,
indeed. Okay, great. We're going to take another break. We'll come back with Tim Miller. If you have a question you'd like me to get to him, I'll do my best. You know the way to do it. The Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. I'm Ian Hoke with Tim Miller. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When New Yorkers buy a place with StreetEasy, they have the local expertise they need to stay in the city. When they buy outside the city, they have regrets.
The only way to fix this place would be to move it back to Brooklyn.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the agent you need to never leave. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
I never really thought about it before, but he's kind of like almost saying my name there. H to the is O, C to the is H. Kind of. Nah, no. What do you think? You're not buying it?
No, the title was literally on the song. I-Z-Z-A or H-O-L-E.
Yeah, no, I know. I know what the name of the song is, but I just thought H to the is O, C to the is H. All right. Anyway, thank you, Coleman.
Hey, can y'all switch headphones? I think he's hearing something completely different than what's being aired.
Oh, yeah. All right. All right, funny guy. Great. Eat your peanut butter cup. My guest is Tim Miller. He's the host of the Bulwark Podcast. Editor-at-large for The Bulwark. You can see them on Substack, and you got the website.
YouTube.
Just everywhere. YouTube.
MSNBC sometimes. Yeah, I'm just in my hole uptown just talking into the camera all
God,
day
what
long.
A dream job, man.
It's
really.
Not too bad.
Do you end up doing most of that, you know, editing the content and putting metadata
No, we've
in?
Got editors, thank God. I don't have any technical skills. But, I had my buddy down here does production. He set up a little room upstairs at the house, and so I'm just up there screaming into the void every day. It's nice in the content mind.
You know, you should get a text line like we have where they can tell you how much they hate you in real time. Just kidding, texters. You know I love you. What is one narrative or a spin line that you or somebody in one of the campaigns you worked on fed to reporters or fed to voters back in the day that you wish you could take back?
You know, I think that, like, to me, the things that stand out are, you know, these sort of one-off, you know, stupid rage cycles, which ties into what we were doing in Fox. And like, we fed this sort of stuff. Like, I think about that. Do you remember the Ground Zero mosque?
Oh, of course.
Like, people were upset that there was going to be a mosque, you know, that was built next to where the Twin Towers came down. What a stupid controversy. You know, like, what a stupid fake controversy that, like, really only existed to agitate people and make them upset at Muslims. So I think about that kind of stuff. I don't know. I sort of blocked out, like, most of the 2012 campaign when my job was to take out Obama. But I was like, he said we didn't build that. I remember we went after him for you know, not supporting small businesses and entrepreneurs. But I'm sure we did some unfair attacks on Obama back in that campaign. But at some level, that was the nature of how this, you know, how the game worked.
Oh, of course, yeah. And I don't mean to put you on the spot. Like, did this to Miller, but it is fairly rare for people in your position to turn around and say, hey, the things that I was doing as part of just my employment, it's not like, you know, I'm just trying to do a good job and kind of move on to the next thing.
Here's
but, you know, in
I
hindsight,
remember.
10 years later, like, I would have done that differently.
Yeah, and I'm sure now it's texts. I'm sure people get these texts from campaigns if you're at all interested in politics. But back then, it was mail, like hard copy mail.
Yeah.
And that's what was going mostly to old folks. And I was at the RNC. It was my job to, like, edit and approve the mail, the fundraising mail. And, man, the stuff in there is extremely deceptive. And it's the same tactics you see on your text now of people being like, we're going to match your donation 7 times and, like, you have to donate now or Donald Trump's going to be mad at you, or you have to donate now or Kamala Harris is going to lose. I feel like all of that stuff is extremely manipulative and bad. I feel bad about having been a part of it.
Let's take a couple questions from the audience.
Let's
here. 3885 says, can you ask Tim Miller about Gaza? And does he sense that people are changing their view and their support of Israel?
Yeah, I'm changing my view. So, yes, I do sense that people are changing their view. And throughout the whole time, I felt like this was very sticky. I'm like such a squish on a lot of issues. I was a moderate Republican, which doesn't always make for good podcasts, but I think people appreciate candor. And on this issue, I've struggled with it because the, you know, October 7th attack was so horrific. Mm-hmm. And I think it is totally reasonable for Israel to say, we cannot live with a terrorist organization on our border like this anymore. We've got to take them out. I think that was totally reasonable.
Me too.
I also think that for a long time, we've seen that some of the tactics have been pretty extreme, and that there's been a humanitarian catastrophe that has been unfolding. And, you know, I went through a period of time where I was like, okay, Not that any humanitarian catastrophe is okay, but that if you had an end game, if you had a plan, if there was a real mission here that we're going to take out Hamas and maybe there'll be casualties and that's unfortunate, but then after that we're going to do this, that, and we're going to have a two-state solution, we're going to have this partition. They don't have any of that. Like, it feels like there's no plan, and it's just – they're just blowing Gaza to rubble, and we have this mass starvation problem that is affecting young people, kids, babies in Gaza who are not part of Hamas, were not involved in October 7th. I think that, like, the facts on the ground have changed, and even you can be supportive of Israel's right to exist and also feel like the prosecution of this war has been pretty horrific.
3036 says, what will it take for there to again be a bipartisan Congress that does what's right for the people and what they want, instead of blindly doing what benefits the upper 1% and what the White House wants? Will it take all new people in Congress?
Yeah, I mean, it'll take people voting for people that are interested in that. The reality is that if you listen to focus groups, you listen to voters, it is the minority of voters that want their congressmen to do bipartisan bills that get stuff done.
Right.
Like, what most people want is they want somebody that is going to fight for their side, that is going to be with, if they're Republican, be with Donald Trump 100% of the time. If they're Democrat, be opposed to Donald Trump 100% of the time. That's what voters want. And so the members of Congress are going to reflect their voters. So in this way, the people need to demand it and for anything to change. And I don't really see that happening anytime in the near future. You would have thought, if anything, that a disaster like COVID might have done something that brought people together, but it did the opposite.
Yeah.
It polarized people more. So I don't know. I think it's a really, I think it's a bad problem. I agree with the texter, but I think it's a problem that without a solution that from the top, like the solution has to come from us.
Yeah. People will not run out to vote, much less volunteer and campaign for and donate to a workhorse, you know, somebody that just kind of keeps their head down and goes to Washington and votes for stuff and comes back and takes care of constituents. They would almost always rather have somebody who's going to be on Jesse Waters, you know, three nights a week, you know, throwing bombs and slinging mud. Like, that's just the kind of incentive that we have for Congress people.
And that's what our voters expect of Congress, which is stupid wrong. And we should try to educate that and change that. But if you listen to voters in focus groups, it's funny. The way they talk about mayor and governor is different. Like, there's an expectation that the mayor, like we have this mayor's race happening now, that the new mayor is going to actually provide services, that the governor is responsive to the insurance crisis, economic issues. Regular people, when you ask about the mayor and governor, that's what they say. Then when you ask them, like, what do you want from your congressman? They're like, I want him to own the libs. Yeah. Or if they're a Republican, or if they're a Democrat, it's like, I want him to take on Trump. And if that's what we expect from our national politicians, that's what that we're going to get.
I think that's how we got John Bel Edwards in the first place, right? Yeah. Is if people loved David Vinner, the senator.
Right.
But as soon as he came home and said, well, no, I want to be the executive here in Louisiana, people said, you got to be kidding
me. The diaper guy?
We don't trust you with that at all. Yeah, exactly. Miss us with that mess. I would like to talk about some of the other fellas in, you know, what we can broadly refer to as the Never Trump movement.
Sure.
Starting, I guess, with the Lincoln Project. Your Rick Wilson, your Steve Smith took a lot of heat for taking in millions and millions of dollars in donations from credulous liberals.
Yeah.
And saying, oh, we're going to use this to defeat Trump Republicans in Congress and in the Senate and state houses. That effort was not successful. It was a resounding failure, but they got to keep all that money. So now I don't think it's too far of a stretch to say the Lincoln Project is kind of a grift. And these guys have made a lot of money and taken up a lot of space on MSNBC, CNN, and other places saying, you know, we're the good Republicans. You can trust us.
Yeah.
What's different between the Bulwark and the Lincoln Project in that regard?
Yeah. You know, it's frustrating. I was asked to join the Lincoln Project, and I chose not to because I was worried about the grifty elements of it. And, you know, I appreciate anybody that's fighting Trump. So this is a tough one for me because on the one hand, it's like, I think that a lot of them genuinely thought that their strategy was sound.
Yeah.
And, you know, they also were making money in the process. But they did break through, and a lot of people are familiar with them. The fact that you can name drop them and listeners to the show probably know what you're talking about, like, shows that they did break through. But I don't love those types of tactics. I want to be outside of campaign politics. I want to be able to say what I really think. And so that's the honest answer, is that, like, the Bulwark is anti-Trump, but we also say what we really think. And during the Biden administration, we criticized him, you know, about the Afghanistan withdrawal, which I thought was a disaster. I criticize him for being too old to run again. You know, if a Republican does a good thing, I will say so. You know, we had a mixed views at the Bulwark about the Iran strikes, by the way. Like, we hashed it out internally. Some of us were for it. Some of us were against it. So that's what we're doing. We do have a mission, which is pro-democracy and anti-Trump, but we also are a media outlet that's trying to give people our authentic views, and we're not spinning BS. And that's what I want to do, and I like that. And I think that if you're a super PAC that's trying to raise money for people to run ads, just by the nature, it's not just the Lincoln Project. Any of those groups are a little bit grifty and are at times going to be saying and doing things that they don't really believe, and I'm out of that business.
We have just over a minute left, so I want to be so fast here. For people listening who would like to kind of break rank, as you have and as your colleagues have, but they may not find the courage to do that right away, what would you recommend to them?
It feels great. Nothing has felt better. Coming out of the closet and saying that I'm no longer a Republican anymore were two of the great moments of my life. It's great to be honest with yourself. And you don't have to pick fights with your family or friends over it. Like, you can just be you can just say what you really think and not do it in a way that is adversarial. And I think that's a healthy thing to do for people in their lives. And, you know, you can if you're one of those, you come on down to the Kingpin, have a beer with me on a Saturday. I'll buy you a beer if you're a former Republican.
You answered a question I was getting ready to ask, like, hey, man, where can we go enjoy a couple Miller's Light together? You're a Kingpin man?
Oh, yeah. I love the Kingpin. My man, Steve is the owner. He's a great guy.
Good deal. Well, why don't we'll get together with you and your husband. We'll go to the Kingpin. You guys come down to the Bywater. We'll go to BJ's. We'll have a good time.
Sounds great. I love that.
My guest is Tim Miller from the Bulwark Podcast. You can find him on YouTube, Substack, and just about everywhere else. Thank you so much for your time. This is a great conversation.
Brother, appreciate it.
All right. Take good care. When we come back, we'll do the news bomb, and we'll talk more about that ticket amnesty program the city is offering, and take more of your texts and calls right here on WWL.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Escape the heat to True North convenience stores and get any size True Oasis fountain drink for 89 cents with True Rewards. Cool that thirst with any of your favorite Pepsi fountain drinks for 89 cents. As a free True Rewards member, pick the perfect size for you. No matter if you're craving a big drink or a small sip, it's just 89 cents. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
A message from a former New Yorker, presented by StreetEasy.
We left Brooklyn Heights in 2021, and we miss it. We went from sharing a neighborhood with a few celebrities to sharing a neighborhood with my wife's parents.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.